Madhava Kunya Viva All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is Shri Guru Gauranga Shivopa Ki Jai. Om Gana Timiranda Shagana Janam Shlakaya Chapsur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Veda Maha. So we're going to give a brief summary of the main story of the Mahabharata, although there's many secondary stories in the Mahabharata which would take literally years to tell, because the Mahabharata has 1.8 million words and is four times larger than the Ramayana and many, 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 many times larger than any Western work such as the Iliad and the Odyssey and other literatures like that. In other words, it's the world's largest literature, the Mahabharata. So, we already talked about the demons coming down to the earth planet to escape the demigods, and Krishna having to arrange the demigods coming down to the earth planet to get rid of the demons because the earth planet had complained to the HR department which is run by Lord Brahma, HR, Human Resources. So, and Lord Brahma went to the boss, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, okay, you all better go down to the Earth planet and I'll appear too. Of course, Lord Vishnu appeared as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we'll take care of all those demons. And that was Parichranaya Saranam Vinashaya Chatushkuta. That Krishna comes down and he annihilates the miscreants, establishes religious principles, and protects who, Ayush?
Protects the devotees.
Good. He's a great devotee, that's why I ask him the question. Whenever I forget something, I ask him. So anyway, so this is what happened before the whole story of the Mahabharata. If you're interested in that story, read the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and the beginning of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, once upon a time, there was this great king. His name was Mahabish, and he performed 1,000 horse sacrifices. And because of that, he went where? Why did he get to heaven? Went to heaven. And then when he was in heaven, he made a big mistake. Because Ganga Devi came to a dancing performance that Lord Brahma was holding. Just like you have dancing performances on the earth planet, on the heavenly planets, they have dancing performances too. And he looked inappropriately at Ganga Devi. And because he looked inappropriate, because the wind sort of blew up her skirt or something like that, or dress, whatever they call it. And he got told by Lord Brahma, you got to go down to the earth planet. And then Ganga Devi, sort of like that sort of attention. And so she said, you know, I'd like to be there with him. Okay, go and join him. At the same time, there are 8 buses in the heavenly planets. These are very great personalities. And they had a little bit of a problem. Because one of them, and actually all of them, had stolen the desire cow of Vasishtha Muni. Especially the oldest one, his name was Jal. And they were cursed by Vasishtha Muni to take birth on Earth. So they were looking around for some lady who could give birth to them. And they didn't want to come down to Earth because the Earth has problems. And I'm not talking about the present political situation. Talking about, you know, in general, there's problems here. You know, it's called Marcha Lokam. It's a mixture of, happiness and distress. And, you know, it's quite evident there's problems on the Earth planet. They always have been. So they were looking for some mother to sort of like enable them to go back to the heavenly planets real quickly. So they approached Ganga Devi and they said, Ganga Devi, you know, can you be our mother? And then actually we got a benediction that only one of us has to live a long life. The other ones can actually die immediately. So please arrange for that. Okay. So Ganga Devi says, okay, I'll be your mother and we'll allow the oldest one, his name is Jal, to live a longer life. So they, she goes out to the earth planet and Shantanu is along the Ganges River and Ganga Devi comes out of the Ganges River. She's the personification of the Ganges. And he falls in love with her. It's like love at first sight. Some of you have heard about that before. And he says, basically, will you marry me? And she says, yes, only under one condition, that you never disagree with me. Any of you young girls who are thinking of getting married, you should arrange that too. And you should also arrange that if you're already married, you get wake to your husband sleeping and get him to sign it. You never disagree with me. So, all right, so he's, you know, because, you know, someone who's attached in love, they'll agree to anything. So he agrees, and he thinks, you know, what can this sweet young girl do that's wrong? Because she's sweet. Anyway, that's an illusion. So he gets married, and she has one child after another, and she starts killing all of her kids, drowning them in the Ganges. And he's just like beside himself, you know, completely miserable, you know. But he can't say anything to her. He's taken a promise and made a promise that she'll leave. And so finally, she gets to the eighth one, and she gets ready to drown the eighth one, and he can't restrain himself anymore. He says, "Stop." And she says, "I'm gone." So this poor guy, you know, madly in love, his wife leaves, and his only kid goes with her. And that, of course, is later on Bhishma. So, anyway, so Bhishma goes with her later on. Of course, Bhishma comes back, and Bhishma is given to him by her after he's trained up in all the martial arts. So he's a very... he's actually the disciple of Parashuram, the warrior incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All right, so he comes back. Meantime, but after he comes back, then you have Shantanu, his father, who was previously Mahabish. He falls in love with another girl on a river. You gotta be careful. You gotta be careful when you go to rivers. I guess. Especially if you see some beautiful girl rowing a boat. You know. So this was, her name was Satyavati. And she was rowing a boat. She was a fisherman's daughter. And before this whole encounter, she had given birth to Shiva Vyasadeva and Parashara Muni. Blessed her that she would not only be extremely beautiful, but she would have a scent that would attract men for like 8 miles away. She's called Ganda Yojana. Ganda Yojana is 8 miles. So it's like some of our devotees are selling essential oils. So you can buy that essential oil from the church. You can give a CD if you want. She has this Ganda Yojana oil. Anyway, please see her later. Raise your hand. So anyway, so she was Kanda Yojana. And so he got attracted. Shantanu got attracted to her, and he said, "Will you marry me?" And he went to her father. Her father said, "Only if her son later becomes the king." So Shantanu fell into a state of depression at that point. And because in those days there were no therapists, he was very depressed. And Bhishma, his son from his first marriage, with Ganga, just saw his father depressed. He probably, you know, he discovered what happened. That his father was depressed because his father, again, was madly in love. And so he went to the fisherman who happened to be the father of this Satyavati, the fisher girl, Matsya Rajini. And he went to her, and he said, "You know, my father wants to marry your daughter. And therefore, so that her son would become the king, I'm renouncing the kingship." And the father said, "All right, I think that's a great vow. But what about your son? You know, when you have a son, you know, he's going to be fighting against her son or her whole dynasty." So he says, "I take a vow to be lifetime brahmachari and to always support the king." So therefore he's called Bhishma, Dhritavrata, I mean, Devavrata. You know, so many names for Bhishma like that. Okay, it's important we have the story about Bhishma because he's one of the main characters in the Mahabharata. So Satyavati gets married to Shantanu, and basically they don't live happily ever after. They have two kids. They have Vitrachirvirya and Chitrangada. And Chitrangada gets killed by a Gandharva. So there's one kid left. So Vitrachirvirya, he's doesn't have a wife, and he's kind of weak. You know, he can't get his own wife. Because in those days, the fighters, the Kshatriyas, if they want to have a wife, you have to win them. It's like, that's why they call them trophy wives. So you have to go out and fight, have some competition. Swayambara really means the lady chooses her own, but she naturally chooses the guy who's most heroic and handsome. She's not going to choose a 90-pound weakling as her husband, right? So this is, it's true. This is what happens. I mean, she can say no to someone, but you know, someone looks handsome. How can she say no? Even if you go back to the Ramayana, where Ravana was kidnapping all these girls. And he was cursed not to be able to force himself upon any girl. Still, 99% of the girls accepted him voluntarily because he was extremely handsome. He wasn't ugly Rakshasa, handsome Rakshasa. So, anyway, not going to comment on that. As far as modern society is concerned, there are many good-looking Rakshasas in Russia. So Bhishma goes to Kashi to get the three daughters of Kashi. He kidnaps them, basically. Amba, Ambalika, Ambika, Ambika, and Ambalika. That means Amba, little Amba, very little Amba. So, it's a typical girl's name, Amba. So he kidnaps them, brings them back, discovers that Amba really was in love with Shalva before, so she can't get married to Vichitravir. So she goes back. Shalva doesn't accept her back because the Kshatriyas were very proud. Comes back, says, Bhishma, now you have to marry me. And Bhishma says, no way, because I've taken this vow. And plus, I'm not going to marry someone who's angry with me. It's bad news. So she basically, later on, after encountering Parashuram and getting Bhishma to fight with Parashuram, she gets the vow that in the future life she's going to be the cause of the death of Grandfather Bhishma. And that's really what happens later on. We'll get to that later on. So Vichitravirya gets married to Ambika and Ambalika. And he's just like really weak of health and he dies. And because he's dead, there's no prince to take over the kingdom. So in those days, if you had a brother, if a man died and his brother is still alive, the brother could have children by his brother's wives. So Satyavati calls for Vyasadeva, who is the half-brother, actually, the half-brother of Vichitravirya. So Vyasadeva comes, and he approaches these two ladies, and Vyasadeva, after executing all these austerities, I'm just making a quick story, he looks like someone who's been in the forest for 10 years. I mean, he's a great pure devotee, but you take a pure devotee and put them in the forest for 10 years and matted hair, they're not exactly something a woman would want to get married to. So he approaches Ambika, and when she sees him, at the behest of his mother, of course, and when she sees him, she just closes her eyes and goes, "Ew!" And as a result, Dhritarashtra is born, blind person. And then he approaches Ambalika, and she knows not to close her eyes, but she turns white. And as a result, Pandu is born. So you have Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, it's mentioned by Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, that he was blind materially as well as spiritually. So completely blind. Okay. So then you have, of course, then Satyavati thinks we need another kid. So she tells Ambika to approach, not Ambika, she tells Vyasadeva to approach Ambika. And Ambika doesn't want anything more to do with it. So she sends Vyasadeva, or substitutes her nurse or her servant in place of herself. And her servant is a pure devotee, appreciates Vyasadeva, worships Vyasadeva, touches his feet, and as a result, the child born of that combination is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead named Vidura, who is an incarnation or appearance of Yamaraj. Yamaraj got cursed. He actually arranged for the curse so he could go on vacation. Because Yamaraj he's like a prison warden. It's not a really good occupation to have, you know. Basically, it's not that people love you in your workplace. So he wants to go someplace and preach. And he's given the best preaching opportunity to preach to the Kurus and the Pandavas. So Vidura appears. So there's the three children, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. And so then it comes time for getting them married. You know, there's a big stress on getting married because they want to have the next kings, because it's very important to have continue a dynasty, to have proper marriage. Like, Krishna Priya was talking about proper marriages, Grahastha Vision Team, and I talk about the Sannyasi Vision Team, convincing people not to get married. So, anyway, we have different services conflicting. So Bhishma has to arrange for their marriages too. Actually, for at least marriage to Dhritarashtra, because Dhritarashtra is blind, so he arranges for Gandhari. And Gandhari, who is coming from Afghanistan, in fact, she's Kandahar. Because she marries Dhritarashtra and she doesn't want to be better than Dhritarashtra, she binds her eyes, so she's voluntarily blind her whole life. And Pandu is able to get his own wife. He marries Kunti. And later on, he gets Madhuri too, so he has two wives. And so, to make a long story short, actually there's a lot of little stories here. Pandu at a particular point made a big mistake and he killed a sage during a hunting accident. And so he's been cursed, a sage and his wife actually. He's been cursed to actually not be able to approach his wife, or his wives. So he has to go to the forest with his wives, taking sort of a vanaprastha type of activity. Meanwhile, Dhritarashtra is the king, not actually king because he wasn't allowed to be a king because he was blind. In those days, kings had to have their sight. The reason for that is that the kings, whenever there was a battle, had to be at the forefront of the battle. And that would prevent a lot of wars. Can you imagine if you had, let's say, the President of the United States wants to declare a war? Okay, you're flying to where? Korea. It'd be a lot less threats and a lot less wars if you had that particular stricture in place. So I think a lot more resignations, too. Dhritarashtra is there. He's sort of like acting as the king, even though he's not the king, but you know, in the place of the king, in the place of Pandu, and Pandu's in the forest. And Gandhari gets pregnant, but she also has a benediction from Lord Shiva, who gave her a benediction previously. She would have 100 sons. That's a lot. And so she's pregnant, and Kunti and Madhuri in the forest with Pandu, and they're thinking, well, we're not going to have any children. Pandu is lamenting. Well, I'd like to have a son. And Kunti remembers a particular benediction that she got from Durvasa Muni. That whenever she calls for a demigod, the demigod would come and give her a son. Previously, before she was married, she actually made a mistake and called for the sun god, and she got Karna. And he's an important part of the story. So she tells Pandu, then yes, you can have sons, I'll just call for different demigods. So Pandu thinks, well, let's call for Dharmaraj and Yamaraj, who's actually, you know, the most religious, pious person in creation, besides Krishna. And she calls for him, and she has a son by him, and that's Yudhisthira. At the same time, Gandhari's been pregnant, and she hasn't given birth, and it's more than 9 months, a lot more than 9 months. And she gets very upset hearing that Kunti has given birth before her. And she, you know, punches her womb. She gives birth to a lump of flesh. That lump of flesh is divided up into 101 parts by Srila Vyasadeva and put into little incubators. And the one part is the daughter, Dushala, who's later married to Jayadrath. But we're not going to tell the story about that Jayadrath. It's a long story right there. So anyway, so she has these 100 little incubators, but still Kunti has had a kid first. Then Kunti calls for the wind god, Vayu, for her second kid. And at the same time, one of the little incubators pops open. And that's Duryodhana. But when that incubator pops open, or he kicks it open or whatever, there's the sound of jackals howling and, you know, wind rushing through the trees. All inauspicious things that you better, like, put him aside because he's going to be the cause of the destruction of the entire dynasty. But they don't agree because, you know, attachment is naturally there. So then all these 100 sons are born, one daughter is born, Bhima has been born, the son of the wind god. And then Kunti calls for Indra. And as a result, Arjuna is born. So you got three of the Pandavas. And Madri, she's feeling at this point a little disappointed. You know, Kunti's had three kids, and I don't have any. She asks Kunti if she could borrow the mantra, or Kunti could chant the mantra for her. So that happens, and she makes a trick. She gets two for the price of one. The Ashwini Kumaras come, and they have Nakula and Savi. So now there's the five Pandavas, and then there's Dhritarashtra's 100 sons. So that's the background right now. So Pandu later on dies because he becomes attracted to Madri, and that was the curse. He was going to die if that happened. And so the Pandavas, after living in the forest with their parents for many years, actually they were like forest dwellers, they were accustomed to dwelling in the forest, time's running out. So they go back to Hastinapur, where their cousin brothers are, that is Duryodhana and the other 99 sons of Dhritarashtra. And Duryodhana is not a happy camper to see them, and he makes many, many plans to kill them. Some of the plans are like poisoning Bhima, and when he tries to poison Bhima, throws him into a lake, Bhima gets bitten by a serpent, and that counteracts the poison, and he drinks this Rasa Kundala, which makes this powerful as 10 million elephants. So all of his plans fail. They also try to kill the Pandavas by sending them on vacation to Varnavat, where there's a house of lakh. That means a house that's made of like with ghee and wax and everything like that. They try to burn them to death, but the Pandavas tunnel out of the house and are able to escape and actually go into hiding at that particular point. And while the Pandavas are in hiding, the Kurus, that is the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra and Dhritarashtra himself, are thinking the Pandavas are dead. So therefore, we've won. But actually, the Pandavas are not dead. They're just in exile because they just want to avoid all this conflict. And there's many things happen when they're in exile, like they kill some demons. And Bhima, he gets married to a Rakshasa lady, and has a son named Gadavkach. The Rakshasa lady's name is Hidimbi. And he kills the Hidimbi's brother. So anyway, these are all side stories there. But in any case, Gadavkach is a very important personality because he later saves Arjuna during the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because during the Battle of Kurukshetra, fast forward, you have Arjuna fighting Karna. Karna, who is Kunti's first son, and nobody knows it's Kunti's first son except for Kunti herself and Krishna, and Vyasadeva, and Grandfather Bhishma also knows it. So Karna has this dart that's been given to him by Indra that no person can counteract. And because of that, it can only be used once. And because of that, Krishna has to make a plan so that the dart can be used on someone else other than Arjuna, and Gadavkach takes that dart. So actually, he's a very important person, and he saves Arjuna's life. Because had he not done that, the Pandavas would have lost the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna was intervening in many places to make sure that the demigods and their associates and their expansions won during this battle of Kurukshetra. So, a lot of things happened. Let's see, fast forward. Okay. So then finally, when the Pandavas are in exile, they hear about a Swayamvara that's being conducted in the kingdom of Jupiter, Jupiter's kingdom, for Jupiter's daughter, Draupadi, who has been born from fire. The reason Jupiter wanted a daughter that was born from fire is he didn't. He wanted a son that was born from fire, Drishtadyumna, so he could get even with his friend, Dronacharya, who had offended him, he went to school with originally, and Dronacharya offended him by having the Pandavas and Kurus, Dronacharya was their guru, conquer him and give half the kingdom to Dronacharya, half of Jupiter's kingdom to Dronacharya. So Jupiter had this real vengeance against Dronacharya, so he had them performing fire sacrifice, in which they got this Drishtadyumna, who was meant to kill Dronacharya. But Drishtadyumna, not only was he born from the fire sacrifice, but also a lady came out, and she's called Yajnasethi. That means the lady was born from the yajna, and that was Draupadi. She was born from fire. So, anyway, so it comes time for her Swayamvara. And there's all this competition. All the kings come from all over India, Afghanistan, practically the whole world, because she's the most beautiful girl, born from fire. I mean, just... And so even Duryodhana goes there, Karna goes there, big competition. The competition was that whoever was competing had to pick up this bow, string it, and pierce the eye of a fish that was swimming like overhead by looking in a pool of water on the ground. Wow, that's pretty difficult. And the fish was swimming, going round, 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 and the pool was wavering like that on the ground. And basically no one could pick up the bow, except for Karna. But Karna, as I mentioned before, he was Kunti's first son, born before the marriage, but nobody knew that. And he had been adopted by this couple, who were charioteers. His name was actually Radheya, named after his mother's name. So, anyway, so everyone thought he was low class, from a low class family, because in those days the caste system was very prominent. So, so Draupadi said he can't compete because he's from a low class family. And he was insulted, even though he was able to pick up the bow. Finally, Arjuna comes, but he's dressed as a Brahmin, as I mentioned before, the Pandavas were in hiding. And he hits the eye of the fish, looking down at the pool, the wavering pool on the ground, and he wins the girl. So he goes back to his mother and says to his mother, "Guess what I won today?" And his mother says, "Well, whatever you've won," she doesn't even look and see what it is, or what the gift is. "You got to share it equally with all your brothers." And in those days, sons listened to their mothers. So whatever mother said, that's it. So then she got married to all of them equally. Of course, that was due to her past life, where she was back as she was begging Lord Shiva for a husband. She couldn't find a husband. And there was no internet in those days. So it's... So the way that people got husbands in those days is either they worship Kachayani or Lord Shiva. So she was such a good worshiper of Lord Shiva, he finally appeared in a previous life. And she said, "I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband." And he said, "Okay, five coming up." And she said, "No, that's not what I meant." He said, "Well, you ask five times, you get five husbands. That's what you're going to get." So... anyway, so somehow or other she gets married. It was predicted, and Vyasadeva, of course, intercedes and says this is what's supposed to happen. So her father, Drupad, is not too upset with the whole thing, and he discovers they're actually Pandavas, and he's happy that the Pandavas are getting married. So in the meantime, some of the Pandavas get married, and it's discovered they go back to Hastinapur. Eventually, they make their own kingdom in Kanavaprastha. They develop this whole beautiful kingdom like that. And while they're in that kingdom, because they have to separate from the gurus, because you can't live with someone who's just trying to kill you all the time. It's better you have your own kingdom. So while they were there, the Pandavas were told by Narada Muni, "You better be careful, because if you argue with each other over Draupadi, you know, you have one wife, five husbands, it's a recipe for disaster. Don't try it at home." So, therefore, you have to make this arrangement. If any one of you is with her, and you each get 1 year at a time, then the other one can't intrude when they're in privately with her. But what happened is that Arjuna had to intrude one time because his weapons were kept there, and the cows were being stolen. So he had this dilemma, you know, what am I going to do? The cows are being stolen. My weapons are there. I can't defend the cows. So he thought, well, I'll have to go in exile because it's the deal that Narada Muni told him to do, exile for many, many years. So he goes in, retrieves the weapons, gets the cows back, And then he goes in exile for years, actually, many, many years. And so the first thing that happens when he's in exile, he goes to the Ganges and goes bathing. He gets dragged underwater. You know, he's not going to die. He gets dragged under the water, and this girl drags him down because he's handsome. This is a reverse Swamvara. He said, Hulupi drags him down in the water, and she says, let's get married. He says, well, I'm taking a vow of brahmachari life. And she says, no, that's not really true. You're taking a vow of brahmachari life in relationship to Draupadi, not in relationship to all of us. So they get married, they have a kid. And then later on, he goes to Manipur, which is a state of India, and he meets Chitrangada, and he gets married there. So all these different personalities who he gets married to, and the children from these personalities are very important in the Mahabharata because they later on help in the Mahabharata war. Arjuna, at the end of his exile period, does something very interesting. There's been a marriage arranged between Krishna's sister and Duryodhana. The reason that's been arranged is Krishna didn't want to arrange it, but Balaram arranged it because Balaram is the martial arts guru of Duryodhana. In fact, a name for Balaram is Duryodhana Guru. Prabhupada gave that name to one of my godbrothers, Duryodhana Guru, and of course we always call him Duryodhana. But, which wasn't so appropriate. People always shorten the names, like my name, they always call me Beer. That's not appropriate at all. So Balaram really wants Subhadra to marry Duryodhana because, you know, it's his disciple. Obviously you want your sister to marry your disciple. And Krishna doesn't want that. So he arranges for Arjuna, who's actually Guy in the guise of the sannyasi at this particular point, to come into the house and eat dinner with them all. And Arjuna is making eyes as a sannyasi at Krishna's sister. And Balaram doesn't see it. And Arjuna kidnaps him. Balaram's ready to kill him. And Krishna sort of appeases him. And that's how Krishna married Subhadra. And that's a very important marriage too, because from that marriage, Abhimanyu came. And Abhimanyu, even though he was 16 years old fighting in the Battle of Kurukshetra, he was the most heroic fighter. He fought up all the Kurus who were still alive at that point, simultaneously. And he was killed by all of them. It took all of them to kill him. He was such a great fighter. He inherited his father's prowess, Arjuna's prowess. And then, of course, Abhimanyu was married to Uttara, who later on gave birth to Parikshit, who was saved in the womb by Krishna. And that was the continuation of the dynasty. So it's very important. All these arrangements. See, Krishna's there, like, I guess on the chessboard or something like that, and he's moving all these pieces according to his plan. And the pieces don't understand what's happening. If you're on the chessboard, you think, why is the guy moving me? Like, I'm just a pawn. He just moved me once, like that. But he has a master plan. And really, that's what's happening. You see that throughout the Battle of Kurukshetra. So also, in order to perform, we didn't talk about the whole hunt of the forest thing. There's not time for that. In order to perform the Rajasthiya sacrifice, they have to arrange for this other demon to be killed, Jarasandha. And Krishna arranged that Bhimsen killed him by wrestling with him and splitting him in two. That story's there in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then, the Kurus are so envious of the Pandavas because the Pandavas have established this kingdom in Kandavaprastha that is so beautiful. There's a palace there that has been made by the demon Maya, where land looks like water, water looks like land. There's crystal doorways. I mean, it's just an amazing place. And then even when Duryodhana was visiting the place, you know, he stepped on water, which he thought was land, and he fell into the water. And then all the girls were laughing at him. That really got him riled up, really got him angry. So that was during the Rajasuya sacrifice. So the Kurus are so angry, what are we going to do? And they had a wonderful uncle who helped them. Very loving uncle. The brother of Gandhari, who was the mother of the Kurus, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. So she, her brother loved her so much that he was so angry that she got married to a blind man that he, basically his intention was to destroy the whole dynasty. He really wasn't on the side of the Kurus. He really wanted to, like, immolate everybody. He was so angry because he loved his sister so much. So he influences his nephews to have this gambling match. And they have this big gambling match. They invite Yudhisthira and the Pandavas because the Kshatriyas couldn't refuse gambling match, a fight or a gambling match. So they're all going there, this gambling match. And this Shukuni, he has loaded dice. In other words, he could throw it and it would land the way he would want. And so he keeps throwing it and keeps winning. And he keeps winning. The Pandavas give up their crowns, they give up their kingdom, they give up the people in their kingdom. And eventually Yudhisthira, he's gambling away his brothers one by one. You know, this is a gambling fever, actually. Gambling is the greatest of cheating games, according to Krishna. And indeed, according to Prabhupada, too. So, it puts one into such an illusion that one loses everything. Like if one goes to Las Vegas. Everyone's heard of Las Vegas? They have a notary public right outside all the gambling casinos because people actually turn over their cars thinking they're going to win, you know, win back the cars, and everyone loses the cars there. People have to leave Las Vegas basically with a barrel around them. I mean, that's a little euphemistic, but they leave with nothing. So Yudhisthira Maharaj loses his brothers, and finally, after losing everything, he gambles his wife. And Draupadi is dragged into the assembly by Dushyasana, and there's the idea that in order to defame her, because she's now the property of the Kurus, they're going to disrobe her. And so Dushyasana tries to disrobe her, you know, pulling on her asari. She tries to fight against him, and basically she's not able to fight against her. But then she realizes my only recourse, or her only recourse, is Govinda. And another name of Draupadi is Krishna, because she's actually a friend of Krishna. And she looks, you know, the blackest complexion like Krishna too. And anyway, she's very, very close with Krishna. And so she prays, Govinda, Govinda, and Govinda provides unlimited cloth. And so poor Dushyasana is getting carpal tunnel syndrome. You understand, we're pulling the cloth, and he's like, ah. And Draupadi, at that point, she curses the Kurus. And Bhimsen also does his curse. He says, you know, I'm going to kill Dushyasana, who's done this, and break the thighs of Duryodhana. Because Duryodhana said to Draupadi, you should sit on my lap. So I'm going to break his thighs. I'm going to kill Dushyasana and all the sons of Dhritarashtra. And when I kill Dushyasana, yeah, I'm going to open up his heart and take the blood and put it in Draupadi's hair. And Draupadi, of course, at that point, refuses to tie her hair anymore until she gets her vengeance. So that's a sign when a woman just has her hair out like that. Of course, I don't know if anyone can have their hair out. No. I'd be scared. So, and then, so you have the ground being prepared for the whole battle of Kurukshetra at this particular point. And so, then what we have is Dhritarashtra sort of gives the Pandavas back their kingdom, and the Duryodhana and Shakuni, his uncle, want another gambling match, and, you know, like all or nothing gambling match. Whoever loses has to go into exile for 13 years, and if they have on the 14th year, 12 years, on the 13th year, if they're discovered, they have to go into exile for another 13 years. And so the Pandavas lose, obviously, because the dice are loaded. They have to go into exile. And while they're in exile, many, many things happen, which we're not going to have time to tell stories. But basically, they get more weapons. This exile is very important, even though it appears to be a curse or to be some negative thing. During that time, Arjuna is able to get weapons from the Lord Shiva, he's able to go to the heavenly planets, he's able to learn how to dance. So later on he becomes the Yamala during the 1 year of Ahimsa, Yadavas. During the 1 year when he's supposed to be hiding. And Bhimsen gets the blessings of Hanuman. And Hanuman agrees to become the flag on the chariot of Arjuna. And later on during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Hanuman on the flag was actually able to roar. And he was able to roar so ferociously that many soldiers died just from the roar. Just from the flag. So the Pandavas become more powerful during this whole time of exile. And there's one time during the exile where Jayadrath, who is the brother-in-law of Duryodhana, married to Dushala, tries to kidnap Draupadi. And the Pandavas, of course, what they do at this particular point is they catch Jayadrath and leave him with five little tufts of hair on his head, indicating the five Pandavas who have just defeated him. And he later on becomes the cause of the death of Abhimanyu, because he gets a benediction from Lord Shiva later on that he's able to hold off all the Pandavas except for Arjuna for one day. So Abhimanyu, that's why I said before, Abhimanyu is fighting alone with all the Kurus because of Jayadrath. And Jayadrath later on dies because Arjuna takes a vow to kill him in one day, and the Kurus are trying to protect Jayadrath. But Krishna arranges that the sun appears to disappear for the day because people wouldn't fight after the sundown. And then Arjuna gets that opportunity, and then Krishna shows the sun is actually there. So anyway, you see that Krishna's there, you know, just arranging all these different things during the battle of Kurukshetra. Such an interesting thing. So the Pandavas are able to go into exile, and they are not discovered. And after the period of exile, of course, they come out and they want to declare war. Krishna tries to prevent the war. He knows there's going to be a war. He wants there to be a war because this is his way of getting rid of all these invaders of the Earth planet. But so the people won't blame him. This is mentioned in the Mahabharata. That's why he tries to. So he goes to the Kurus in Hastinapur and he says, you know, give the Pandavas at least five villages. And Duryodhana, being so envious, doesn't realize that that would mean a win for him. But he's so envious, he says, we're not going to give him enough land to fit under a pin. And then after that, he's so envious, he says, and we're going to capture Krishna. So he tries to capture Krishna. Krishna manifests a universal form, scares him. Still Duryodhana is not deterred at all. Can you imagine how stupid this guy is? That, you know, you're practically given a win. You know, they just need five villages. And he refused that. He tried to capture the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he manifests a universal form. And you still think you're going to win. Wow. Talk about how one gets bewildered by lust, anger, and greed. Still thinks he's going to win. That's the problem. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguna samubha. So anyway, so Krishna says, wasn't successful. He tries to persuade Karna not to fight. And he tells Karna he is actually Kunti's son. Karna says, you know, I made this promise to my friend Duryodhana. And then the battle takes place, or at least everybody gathers, Dhamrikshetra, Kurukshetra, Samaveta, Yudhisthira. And Arjuna, this is just leading up to the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna becomes a little weak-minded. Out of natural compassion, when he sees his cousin brothers there, not only his cousin brothers, his grandfather Bhishma there, he sees his guru there, Dronacharya, also Kripacharya, who's another guru. And he thinks, it's better then I just leave the battlefield and basically take sannyas. How can I enjoy the kingdom? He's thinking of himself. This is the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He's thinking to himself, how can I enjoy the kingdom if all my relatives are dead? But he's not thinking that the whole purpose is not to enjoy the kingdom. The whole purpose is to carry out dharma, to be dharmic, to do what's best for the people, to do what's best following Krishna's direction. And that's where the Bhagavad Gita starts. Okay? And I said I would do it. And 45 minutes, it took a little longer. So, anyone have any quick questions before we take prasad? Now, there's many other stories within stories in the Mahabharata which I didn't have time to tell. Very interesting stories. And if you're interested, there's a full version of the Mahabharata translated by Ganguly. That's available, I think, in India. Also, I think it's an e-book, too. It's available as an e-book on Kindle. Kindle has it. So if you're interested in the whole Mahabharata story, it's quite interesting. It's the most interesting epic story in human history. Yes?
But is the Subramanian Bhagavad Gita, the Subramanian Mahabharata, is that discouraged?
I don't know too much. I read the Ganguly one. I'm not. Actually, there's been many, just to be technical, there's many different versions of the Mahabharata, and some of them differ in details of the story from others. Because the Mahabharata is an oral tradition, and passed down from disciple, from the spiritual master to disciple. And so the basic story is always the same, but in South India you have a little, quite a few bit differences in the details of the Mahabharata than from North India. But the basic story, which I told, is always there. So, actually there's something like 84 different versions of the Mahabharata. And many years ago, I think it was during the 1900s, the scholars, they tried to come up with what's called the critical edition of the Mahabharata. Critical edition means trying to figure out what the original is, looking at all the different editions. They weren't able to do it. But the basic story, which I told, is always there in every one of the Mahabharatas.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. This is a quick question. I don't know if you have a quick answer, but how do we apply the principles of Bhagavad Gita to us individually today?
Well, next week. First of all, it's interesting, the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes people say, we're not the body. Krishna basically says in the Gita what we are, not what we're not. So when I was a new devotee, I would always tell people, you're not your body, and they thought I was crazy, I had some mental illness. So instead, nowadays I tell people what they are. Your spirit soul. So I tell people, sometimes we interpret the Bhagavad Gita in a negative way, but it's actually very positive. Krishna is presenting what we are. You're eternal, full of bliss, full of knowledge. When the body dies, you don't die. The soul's not burned by any fire or destroyed by any weapon. This is Bhagavad Gita's second chapter, of course. And so, That's what I would present. You're eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. All you got to do is remember your relationship with Krishna. Or as Lord Chaitanya gave the example of a man who had an inheritance left to him, and it was buried in the ground, but he didn't know where to dig. On one side there was like a venomous snake, and on the other side there was a witch or something like that, or whatever. I forget the details of the story. So we just have to tell people where to dig to revive their original spiritual blissful nature. Everybody wants to be happy. Like we say, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. And that's really Bhagavad Gita is basically summarized in chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That's my summary of the Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantas cha dradavratam namasyam dasyamam vajra nityupra upasate. That's my summary. Mandana, Babamat, Bhaktu, Mat, Yaji, Mandana, Masku. So, any other quick questions before prasadam?
What
What is the progress with Sridharan Maharaj's Bhagavad?
Mahabharata.
Do you know?
I'm not. He's translated some of the chapters of the Mahabharata. He wants to put it into a modern context, I think. That was his latest endeavor. As the Pandavas and as a story. Do it as a story. I don't think he's going to do a literal translation of the whole Mahabharata, but he's going to make it a story. You call it the Pandavas, isn't it? Versions.
And according, Maharaj was saying, according to the tradition, in different, like in South India, with the more conservative things that were presented in a particular way, in this area. So, and somehow or other, that was
dropped. Because there's many different versions, and basically the one version, Ganguly did a good translation of that one version. So, other literatures we have in their original form, like the Bhagavatam we have in the original form, and the Bhagavad Gita is in the original form, because that was passed unbroken in disciplic succession. Most of the Puranas have not been passed unbroken in disciplic succession. Things have been added, things have been taken away. So therefore, when we speak from authority, we want to speak from authority, we speak from things we've learned from disciplic succession, rather than this Puranic story, that Puranic story, which may or may not be bona fide. So. Okay, on that happy note, I think it's time for prasadam. It's going to be outside, or I guess so. So I want to apologize. The heater is being fixed this week for the outside pavilion. If we turn it on now, it would just be gas, and we don't want to kill anyone tonight. We want you all to live, to chant Hare Krishna, to be happy, live another day to chant. So, thank you very much. All glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.
Synopsis, we come to next week's Jayanti. Hare Krishna.